Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
The True People's Radio.
Tom Hartman.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way. Oh, man, last night... Well, let me share my opinion of this situation with you in just a moment, because I want to create a what is referred to sometimes as a framing device. Ms. Rice today, Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of State, called dialogue... Well, this is the headline from the Washington Post. Rice calls dialogue with Iran pointless. Pointless. Can you imagine if Richard Nixon had said, no, we're not going to talk, or if Dwight Eisenhower or Jack Kennedy had said, no, we're not going to talk to the Soviet Union. They're going to do what we want, or we're going to launch our nuclear missiles. I mean, this is pathetic. This is insanity raised to the level of pathetic. Okay, number one. Number two, new U.S. report finds that U.S. companies' planned layoffs rose 15% in May from April to the highest monthly total since December of 2005. May's total was 46% higher than the same month a year ago, 71,115 planned layoffs. May was the most violent month in Afghanistan since 2001, when we first started bombing that hapless country. Now, I start all this, I know everybody is like, hey, you know, didn't you notice last night Obama got the nomination? Yeah, and that's why I begin with this. These are the stakes. We're talking about the future of the planet. We're talking about global warming. We're talking about war without end. We're talking about the future of the Supreme Court and whether we have civil liberties in the United States, whether contraception is going to be legal in the United States, whether we're going to have writ of habeas corpus, whether you and I can be captured on the streets of our city and shipped off to some prison ship or some foreign nation that tortures people simply because the President of the United States decided that he or she didn't like us. That's what we're talking about. This is serious stuff. The stakes are really high. John McCain in 1998, regardless of what he said last night, voted 100% of the time with the Bush administration. And in 2008 and in 2007, John McCain voted 95% of the time with the Bush administration. Last night he tried to say, oh, I'm not the same as Bush. I'm very different from Bush. This morning I was at Fox News with Michael Reagan, and Reagan's going, you know, I feel like I've been thrown under the bus. I'm a conservative. McCain was sucking up to the Clinton folks. Well, yeah. Expect more of the same. McCain is going to be a formidable candidate, but he's doing it by dishonesty. And there's a long history of that working for Republicans. So anyhow, last night, I'm here in New York. We're going to be doing our show tomorrow from the United Nations. I'm broadcasting today from our world headquarters of Air America. And Friday, I'll be doing the show from the Talkers Convention. And so anyhow, I'm here in New York, and I'm staying with my best friend, Jerry Schneiderman, Jerry and I go back 30 years, and we've owned a couple of businesses together. We have a fold-out sofa bed in his living room that I paid half the cost of 20 years ago, and it's still where I sleep when I come to town. And we're watching the show together, and we watch Hillary Clinton's speech. First we watch McCain, then we watch Hillary Clinton, then we watch Barack Obama. And 5 minutes into Obama's speech, he's congratulating Hillary Clinton on what a great campaign she ran and what a great, you know, the campaigner she is and what a loyal American she is. And Jerry turns to me and he says, you know, there is something in common between Hillary Clinton's speech and Barack Obama's speech. And I said, what's that? He says, they're both talking about Hillary Clinton. Barum. No, but it really was, I think, tragic. This was Hillary Clinton's moment to shine. This was her opportunity to be the healer. I've been saying all along, she's the most important person in the race right now. She's the person who can bring it all together. She's the person who can heal the party. Last night was the time to begin the process. Hillary Rosen, who has been an outspoken Hillary Clinton supporter over the blogs and on Huffington Post, as a talking head on TV shows, she's been all over the place. She's done a very, very good job of making the case for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Rosen today, blogging over at the Huffington Post. Her first, I just have to share with you her first and her last couple of sentences. Her first sentence, Senator Clinton's speech last night was a justifiably proud recitation of her accomplishments over the course of this campaign, but it did not end right. And then Hillary Rosen goes on to point out, she says, I'm sure I was not alone in privately urging the campaign over the last 2 weeks to use the moment to take her due, to pass the torch and cement her grace. She had an opportunity to soar and unite. She had a chance to surprise her party and the nation, after the day-long denials about expecting any concession and send Obama off on the campaign trail of the general election with the best possible platform. I wrote before about how she had a chance for her Al Gore moment, and if she had done so, the whole country would all be talking today about how great she is and give her her due. Instead, this is Hillary Rosen, an ardent Hillary Clinton supporter. Instead, she left her supporters empty, Obama's angry, and party leaders trashing her. She said how she was stepping back to think about her options. She's waiting to figure out how she would, quote, use, end quote, her 18 million voters. But not, writes Hillary Rosen in today's Huffington Post, but not my vote. I will enthusiastically support Barack Obama's campaign because I am not a bargaining chip. I am a Democrat. I was fully expecting last night to watch Hillary Clinton rise to the standard that I have, frankly, in my mind, in my heart, held her to, not like, you know, I'm holding you to this, Hillary, but believed she had, that she would begin the healing process, that she would do the thing best, not just for the Democratic Party, but as I opened this show, the best for the nation and the world, for life on earth. She would take the ultimate pro-life position, as it were, that is in favor of saving life on earth, and say, yes, I am going to do everything I can to get a Democrat elected in November. That Democrat being Barack Obama. And by the way, if her strategy last night, and quite obviously it was to get a place as VP on the ticket. And those of you who are regular listeners to the show know that I've said many times, I think that may well be a good idea. I'm not excluding a lot of other people. I think Bill Richardson would be great. I think Joe Biden would be great. I think, you know, John Edwards would be great. There's a bunch of people who would make very, very good. Kathleen Sebelius, Barbara Boxer. I mean, there's no shortage of people who would be good vice presidential candidates. But in my opinion, personally, up until last night, Hillary Clinton was at the top of my list. As I've, you know, and I've not concealed that from anybody. I'm just telling you what I've been saying all along. And if she had taken that opportunity last night to praise Obama, to say congratulations on the campaign you won rather than on the campaign you run or ran. She phrased the sentence in the, as I recall, in such a way as to say run. If she had done that, I think that there would be far more serious discussion today within the Obama campaign about putting her on the ticket. Instead, what she did was say, essentially, I didn't lose, or I didn't win, but I'm not moving the chips across the table, or I'm not going to give you the marbles that you earned, and I'm going to take mine and decide what to do with them and go home. And those marbles, I'm sorry, are people, and a lot of those people are saying, hey, wait a minute. I think I tragically, I personally believe that last night by essentially saying that she was going to try to force her way into the ticket, or the word this morning when I was on Fox News that I didn't use, but the host, we were talking off air, and she says, we were talking off air, and you said she's trying to blackmail him. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll cop to that. The extent to which she is trying to blackmail him or push him into putting her on the ticket is the extent to which I think he's not going to, and perhaps shouldn't. 866-303-2270. Let's have a conversation about this.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Sooner or later, eventually, somehow, step by step, day by day, we're going to get it right here. 866-303-2270, our number. Eddie in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Eddie, what's on your mind?
Hey, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Barack Obama called the presumptive nominee instead of the nominee?
Because the nomination actually happens at the convention, and until a person has been actually nominated at the convention, they're presumed to be the nominee. Same with John McCain.
So. But that doesn't make sense. I mean,
yeah, because it's sort of like saying the if you're engaged to be married, you're not married yet. You're the presumptive wife, or I'd be the presumptive husband, but we're not yet married. You understand?
Well, to me, presumptive means that it could be taken away from him at any time for whatever reason.
Well, no. It means it's everything assumes it's going to happen, but yeah, there are things that could happen between now and the convention. I mean, the old political joke about, the dead hooker in the trunk or the living boy in the bed or something like that. I mean, there could be some horrible scandal that comes out that would cause him to bow out of the race. Hopefully not, wouldn't be the case, but it's conceivable that there could be some kind of health problem or whatever. So until the actual nomination has happened, it's essentially like a coronation at the convention. Until that has happened, the press appropriately just refers to them as the presumptive nominee. Eddie, thanks a lot for the call. Rose in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC.
Yeah.
Hey, Rose.
I'm not a Hillary or an Obama supporter, but, that's the way it ended, and I think Hillary should definitely stay in the race. I mean,
But there's no race anymore, Rose.
No, but I mean, she could still continue until the convention.
Continue what?
I think that she has really earned. She really worked. I think Obama was handed this by the delegates and by the media.
No, she actually he actually won the majority of elected delegates.
Yeah, he won them, but these are individuals that voted for him.
No, he won the majority of elected delegates, people who went to the polls or people who showed up at caucuses and chose to vote for Barack Obama. He won the majority of the elected delegates. And those are the rules by which the Democratic Party chooses
yes,
his nominee, just like we choose our president by the person who wins the majority of the Electoral College. He won the. I know that the Clinton campaign is out there saying we won the popular vote. That ignores all of the states where the elected delegates are elected by caucus rather than by popular vote. The fact of the matter is that the majority of people who either showed up for a caucus or showed up for a primary chose Barack Obama.
Right, and I agree that the party elected him. He won that, but I think they've got the wrong candidate.
That you're entitled to your opinion on that, absolutely, Rose. But and so is Hillary Clinton. But the reality, the political reality, is if she is really a Democrat and if she really does care about her party, she should last night have it should have been the beginning, essentially, of a coronation. And if she wants, and frankly, if she wants to be VP on the ticket. I think, that last night she should have been See, I mean, there, she should have been saying good things, you know, beyond just good things. There's two ways to motivate people. You can either entice them or threaten them. You can offer the carrot or the stick. She chose last night to use the stick. Last night was the night we needed the carrot. We needed moving toward pleasure rather than moving away from pain. I think it was a terrible mistake. Eddie in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk, is it Eddie, right?
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Eddie?
You know, I think much like you and much like everybody else, I was hoping for the carrot, as you call it, but deep down I would have been surprised if that's what had happened. I was not surprised in any way.
I guess I was just naive. I say that sincerely. I mean, I actually believed that she was going to be the great healer last night, and I feel, frankly, like an idiot here today.
And I understand that. I don't think you're wrong for feeling that way. It's a matter of, I just think, I look back to, I mean, a year ago today, I was talking to my friend saying how lucky we were that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were going to run, and it was going to be such a civilized debate on the merits of the issues. And I think you'd be hard-pressed when you look at the negativity that's come out of the back and forth between them. And there's been plenty on both sides. But if you look, I think at the instigation of most of it, I think the majority of it came from the Clinton campaign in the sense that they were just shocked that someone would dare sort of challenge her for this position.
You know, Eddie, I know that you can make a case for that, and a number of people have, and I don't disagree that an awful lot of negativity has come out of the Clinton campaign, and the Obama campaign has, by and large, and particularly their candidate, Barack Obama, has tried to remain above the fray. The Clinton campaign, or the Clinton loyalists, will give you a long list of the slights against them and their candidate as well. I think rather than having that debate all over again, or even that discussion, frankly, all over again, we need to be looking forward. And what's going forward is that Barack Obama is going to be the nominee of this party, barring, God forbid, some you know, health problem or some scandal or something else. He's going to be the nominee of the party, and John McCain is going to be the nominee of the Republican Party. And we need to get over this and start pointing out that literally the fate of the world is at stake here. I mean, we're talking seriously the future of civilization, the future maybe even of all multicellular life forms. This is no time to be... Well, you get it. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at
866-302-2278. Back 34 minutes past the hour, and Philippe and Mike, our web guy, and our Mike Borges, our brilliant engineer, and just came in here and hooked up the camera. I'm not sure if this is a good thing or not, but if you go to airamerica.com/TomVision, TomVision, TomVision, you can see the live video of me sitting here in the studio at Air America. So, hi there. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Lori in San Francisco, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Lori, what's on your mind?
Oh, Tom, first of all, I never miss your show. It's just fabulous, and I've been so educated. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am devastated. I mean, I was watching Hillary's speech last night, and I really gave her the benefit of the doubt that she would not necessarily concede, but that she would recognize Barack and what a historic event this is. And I mean, I looked at my boyfriend and I said, you know, she's hijacking Barack.
Yeah.
I'm so devastated. I don't want him to put her on the ticket now. I was really all for it because I thought, what a bulldog to have as a vice president. But if he does it now, all they're going to say is, oh, well, it was because Hillary that he won the election.
Yeah, yeah, or lost, ultimately.
Exactly,
I mean, it's
and I just, gosh, Thank you for your show. It gives me a place to give my sanity another chance. And I mean, I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to fundraise. I'm going to donate. I've been donating to Barack for quite some time, little by little, like everybody else. And
this is going to be a tough campaign. Lori, I've got to move along, but thank you for your call and your kind comments. This is going to be a very tough campaign. We misunderestimate. I love that word that George Bush invented. We misunderestimate John McCain at our peril, I'm telling you. Craig in Seattle, listening to Talk 1090. Hey, Craig. Craig, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good morning. I just wanted to bring up the fact I've always had a problem with Hillary because I believe she's Republican light. And here's a perfect example of me and we. Barack's whole speech had nothing to do with him. This was all about us and we. And Hillary is still stuck on me. And that's sort of just my comment.
Yeah,
that
well.
And... I love you in that manly, platonic way.
Okay. Thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. Thanks for the caveat. Oh, my. Mark in Hansville, Washington. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, good morning. That was a great comment that he just made. We all love you in that manly,
well,
platonic way.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to say that, you know, a few weeks ago, everybody was talking about how Hillary was not going to give up and she's going to take it all the way to the convention no matter what. And I'm an Obama supporter. I just want to say that up front. And I didn't hear what Hillary had to say last night, but I'm wondering if there could be another take on this. I mean, this is somebody, Hillary is somebody who did something remarkable. I mean, she is the,
she
just
did.
As Barack did. You know,
she
why
did,
not
and she
her...
recited it, and she had every right to, and she should have. And it needed to be acknowledged. But
why not give her that one night and then see? Let's just see what she does today before we just damn her to hell. I mean,
McDonald's. I'm not damning her to hell. You know, give me a break.
No, but other people are. I've been hearing people calling up and crying about this. It's like, well, let's just give her a day. You know, let's let her transition.
But see, last night was that moment of transition. She's seen this. She's seen this handwriting on the wall for some time now. Last night was the night that she could, if she really and truly is campaigning for vice president, as I've been saying on this show for the better part of a month and a half, 2 months.
I agree with that.
She's campaigning for vice president. The way to do it is not to slap down the person that you want to be partners with.
Well, like I said, I didn't hear what she said, but did she actually come out and slap him around?
She said that she had won the majority of the popular vote, which is a bit of a canard. She said, it was many of the talking points from her campaign. She congratulated Obama on the campaign that he had run, not the campaign that he had won. I mean, there was a whole series of points in there. In fact, I actually, you know, made some notes. Let's see. She talked about 18 million voters must be respected. As if all of these voters are her personal property, and she said every vote has to count, which was a clear reference to the fact that she was still unhappy about Michigan and Ohio, and was gonna continue fighting that. When everybody, I think, you know, the resolution that the Rules Committee made was the resolution that Michigan and Ohio's Democratic parties had proposed. They gave them everything they wanted, and she said she's going to make, I'm going to make no decision tonight. Well, I'm sorry. The decision was made for you. She said she's, and she wrapped it up by, please go to my website and let me know what you want me to do. Well, if you go to her website and you click on, you know, good on you, Hillary, or whatever, guess where you're taken? To the fundraising page. I just thought it was tragic. I really did. And maybe others will disagree. In fact, it looks like Susan in Clinton Township, Michigan, wants to disagree with me. So Susan, you're up next. What's up?
Hi. I guess first of all, I want to say I was an avid Edwards supporter, and I kind of just left this race up to whatever. And I didn't care who won. I knew that I would support whatever candidate they put forward. And I did watch both speeches, and I was really impressed when I got a chance to see Barack Obama in Troy, Michigan, when he was here the other day, on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed, and I felt much more comfortable supporting him as a candidate. But part of me, what I took away from Hillary's speech was that she wanted to make contact with her more vitriolic supporters who are threatening to leave the party a little bit more and
Last night was the time to do it, though.
Last night, and help bring them into the idea that this has to be.
But see, that's the point. She shouldn't do that in private. You can't do that. You can't talk to 18 million people in private. Last night was the time to do it. Last night was probably the last time that she's going to have a huge national stage, a huge opportunity to publicly reach out to those 18 million people or 17 and change and say to them, you voted for me. You worked for me. I appreciate it. Now, we're all going to have to embrace the values that Barack Obama and I share, that the differences in policy between us are minuscule compared to the differences between Barack Obama and me and John McCain. And she could have used that as an opportunity to launch off on that, and she failed to. And I just think it's tragic. I think that we're seeing Mark Penn political calculus here, and I think it's the kind of thing that you know, the kind of triangulation strategy that might have worked in the 90s, but it's this country has moved beyond that, and the stakes are too high now.
Well, I agree that the stakes are really high, and like I said, I'm not a Hillary supporter. She was very disappointing. The campaign, some of the things that came out of her mouth were disappointing, but I guess I'm more willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not talking about her reaching out to 18 million people. I'm talking about reaching through her inner circle, which controls what they put out to those 18 million people, about bringing them in. And I thought maybe she just felt she needed time to do that. And I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt, because I think that unifying behind Barack is important. And I guess today I don't think you're helping that cause.
I'm not.
No, because I think you're going to take her most ardent supporters and turn them off. And like I said, I'm thrilled he's the candidate.
I am hearing from many of her most ardent supporters who are saying that they are disappointed by what happened last night. I mean, look at Hillary Rosen's blog today in Huffington Post.
I didn't have a chance to read it, but I heard her talk about it, and I can see that. And maybe they're right, and I'm hopelessly naive, but I just thought maybe she was going to try to give all of them some time to accept her defeat and then come out this weekend and fully support his
That would be appropriate if she'd acknowledged her defeat last night. She didn't.
Oh, I guess I thought she did.
No, she didn't. She never used that word. She never acknowledged that Barack Obama had won or had passed. In fact, she said, South Dakota, you had the final word, and she won there. And she said that 30 minutes before the polls closed in Montana, where Barack Obama beat her by a much larger margin. So I just – and I am – And I, you know, as a listener, you know, I have not been one of those people who have been out there trashing Hillary Clinton, and I'm not going to start now. And you may think that this is trashing her. I'm expressing my disappointment. I'm not saying she's a bad person. I'm not saying she's a terrible politician. I'm not saying that she should be, you know, worked against or whatever. I am saying that I was surprised, and I feel very let down. Susan, I got to move along. Thank you very much for the call. Bernice in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Tom. I, too, am disappointed in Hillary Clinton. I've been a Democrat all my adult life, and I followed Hillary from the time her and Bill Clinton went into the White House, and I've seen her many times in Washington when we went to politics, and she was always gracious and everything else. But last night, she was not gracious. She should have mentioned that she had lost the
nomination.
Yeah. And giving Obama credit. I am going to vote my intention was to vote for who was ever standing prior to the nomination process. And I support Obama. I did not vote for him in the Michigan primary, and I was satisfied the way they penalized us and then gave us back some delegate votes. And so, you know, but she should have been gracious enough to admit that, and she had to know that he was ahead in delegate selection. Popular vote is great. She did a great job as a woman coming this far in a nomination process. And, you know, she should be given credit for that, and she is. But Obama was a presumptive winner, and barring a tragedy, like you said, he will be our candidate, and I will work very, very hard for him, even though I did not vote for him in the primary.
Bernice, thanks a lot. Thanks for listening to us there on WTKG. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program here on Air America Radio. 866-303-2270, TomHartman.com for our live chat.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
homies. If you don't mind, I'm going to try to kick it old school. M to the C to the king, that's me. I'm a grumpy old man straight out of D.C. The Straight Talk Express is shiny and slick, where I built up my rep as a maverick. If you look at the facts, you might see it's a push, because most of the time, hell, I voted with Bush. Well, my friend, it doesn't matter, I don't have to say face, and I have a great chance, because the press is my base.
Ha, your base, ha, ha, your base, ha, your base, ha, ha, your base, ha, your base, the press is your base.
Yeah, the official John McCain rap. The press is his base. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, opposing this crazed Columbia trade deal. You can learn out more about it over Teamster.org. I encourage you to check it out. Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Linda. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Good morning, Tom. I have a couple of comments, but first I want to mention this Al Gore moment that you mentioned, which gave us 8 years of the destruction of America. And then the pardon of Richard Nixon, which gave us 30 years of reactionary Republican rule. Now, I want to say that Obama did not win the 59 delegates in Michigan, yet he's claimed the nomination based on that lie. So there is a contest here.
Even without the Michigan delegates, Obama is over the threshold. Even without the Florida delegates, Obama is over the threshold.
It was an unprecedented and a bad precedent to set of giving a candidate delegates and votes who wasn't on the ballot because he took his name off. That's a bad precedent. Anyway, that should go to the Credentials Committee. And
I think it already has.
Well, it needs to be. Anyway, that's why I think that's why Hillary did it the way she did it. She needs some time to make some decisions. Anyway, who
decisions makes, about what?
Hillary's race is equally historic. And I want to ask you, in what situation would a man, especially a white man, who had 18 million votes and more than 1,900 delegates, be told to get out of the race for the good of the party? Men, especially white men, have carried their campaigns to convention with a hell of a lot fewer votes and a hell of a lot fewer delegates. And who told them to get out? Nobody. The nomination is not official until the convention, until the last delegate votes.
Linda, so, can you give me an example of a time when a nominee for either party had the majority of delegates pledged to them needed to win, and at that point, all of their opponents did not drop out of the race?
I don't know about that, but I
don't believe there are any such examples.
But
the closest you can get to it is 1984 with Gary.
Voters are women, and we are really angry about how this came down. And
well, Linda, if you listen to the show regularly, and I suspect you may, I have never called on Hillary to drop out. In fact, I've been one of the lone voices in the wilderness out here saying this is good for the Democratic Party. It's good for the process. She's a wonderful candidate. If she is the nominee, I will work my heart out for her. You wouldn't believe the flack I've got just for saying those things. But I'm telling you, the Barack Obama last night, regardless of what we may think of the rules, these are the rules that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton agreed to play by. That he passed the threshold of winning the nomination last night, and she didn't acknowledge that. And when you agree to play a game by a particular set of rules, and then at the last minute you say, you know, I really don't like the rules, it's called bad sportsmanship.
Well, yeah, and only women seem to be called on to be good sports.
Well, that's not true at all. This is really not true, Linda. This is not about male or female any more than it's about white or black. This is about a person winning the nomination and being given their due for winning the nomination. This is, and as I said, up until Hillary's speech last night, I mean, I wrote an op-ed for Huffington Post 2 weeks ago saying the headline was Barack, ask Hillary first, because at that point it was pretty clear that he was probably going to be the nominee. And I even said in the op-ed, if Hillary's the nominee, great. I'm all in favor of that. If she's not the nominee, Barack should ask her to be VP. Mm-hmm. And last night, I was feeling that way right up until I saw that speech. And then when I saw that speech that she gave, I was like, she's basically threatening him. And you don't threaten somebody. You want to be essentially a business partner with her, a co-governor with.
Yeah, but I didn't see it as threatening him. I saw it as this is her message to the superdelegates. She's still talking to them and still trying to get their votes.
But they've already voted.
Well, not all of them have. So.
Well, enough that it is not numerically possible for anything, you know, unless she continues to think that she can cause them to change their minds. But, you know, I think that she, and I'm saying this with respect and compassion for Hillary Clinton. I think she shot herself in the foot last night. I'm not saying this critically of her. I think it's a tragedy what she did.
Well, we'll see. But I understand why she did what she did, and there are issues to be contested, and I think that that's why she's taking the time to decide what to do next.
Yeah. Well, Linda, thank you for your call, and thanks for the rational conversation. I very much appreciate it. Mary in Phoenix, Arizona on KPHX. Hey, Mary.
Hello. I wanted to comment not just on the devastation I also felt when I listened to Hillary Clinton's speech last night, but also the fact that prior to that, John McCain gives a speech.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a defining historic moment in the history of the United States of America. And McCain, first of all, the Republicans have no respect for that, no regard for that at all. They have to come out and steal some of the spotlight and steal some of the thunder with his crowd of 75 people. It was pathetic.
Right.
And then Clinton comes out, and I just felt, when I was listening to her, like I was kicked in the stomach. Because I'm one of those people who does not dislike Hillary Clinton. I would have backed her 100% if she was a nominee. I have been a Obama supporter since he campaigned for Peterson here in Arizona in 2006. So, but I would have supported Hillary Clinton until I saw that speech last night. I mean, I felt like I had been kicked in the stomach. I felt like it was so disrespectful, and she should have just stayed home.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, well, I don't think she should have stayed home. I think she should have worked to heal the party. But Mary, your son, thank you for the call. Fascinating. Let's get a conservative perspective on this as well, particularly the McCain part of it. We'll continue this conversation. Terry Jeffrey is going to drop by with the Cybercast News Service, CNSNews.com, in our next segment. Stick around. Should be interesting. Tom Hartman here on Air America.
Tom Hartman.
Taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day, 5 days a week.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The true people's radio.
Tom Hartman.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Let's get a little more conservative perspective on this. Well, actually, I don't know. Terry Jeffrey is the editor-in-chief of CNS News, the Cybercast News Service, CNSNews.com. You can check it out. And Terry, I don't know if you're a McCain supporter or not.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge big fan of John McCain. I certainly haven't endorsed him, I can tell you that.
But I'm assuming you'll vote for him in the fall?
I will tell you this. I mean, one thing that will govern my vote is I'm going to cast a vote that I think will do the most to advance the pro-life cause,
mm-hmm.
which is very important to me, and we'll see what that is in November.
Yeah, well, that would certainly be John McCain as opposed to Barack Obama. Given the statements both of them have made about the Supreme Court and the endorsement of Narol and whatnot for Barack Obama.
But, you know, John McCain has a far from perfect record on the abortion issue from my perspective, I would say. He supports federal funding for embryo-killing stem cell research. He was opposed to the Republican pro-life plank when he ran for president in 2000. In 1999, when he was running for president for the 2000 nomination, he went out and told San Francisco Chronicle he didn't want to see Roe v. Wade overturned.
Yeah, yeah. This is the problem. I was on this morning on Fox and Friends with Michael Reagan, and he was saying he feels like McCain is throwing him under the bus, but he says he wrapped it all up by saying, "But he's still our guy." you know, there's no perfect candidate on either side, you know, ultimately, I think. And most voters, I suspect, are not single-issue voters, whether it's abortion or whether it's gay rights or whether it's the war in Iraq or whether it's civil liberties. Although I think that there are some areas like civil liberties, like the right of the executive branch to simply snatch people like you and me off the streets because they don't like our politics, where people on both the right and the left are a little horrified with what's going on these days. And both McCain and Obama have moved in a direction away from that. I'm curious what your take was on last night, on the both the speeches of the two Democrats, but particularly Barack Obama, the nominee of the party, or the presumptive nominee, and John McCain, the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party.
Well, you know, I have to say I did not see McCain's or Senator Clinton's speech. I did see Barack Obama's speech. And stylistically, I thought it was an outstanding speech. I think he, in fact, I'll give his campaign a lot of credit. They do great jobs organizing these events on the primary nights. They craft excellent speeches. They've got them speaking from a teleprompter, so it looks very good on TV. So I give them 10 points for style. There's no, and I think that the way they present it, it's not just that it scores high on style points. It also shows that he has enthusiasm and momentum because of the size of the crowds they get.
He filled the arena that the Republicans probably will not have that many people in when they have their convention, simply because for logistics, because they're going to need more of the stage space.
Sure.
I mean, he, and on top of that, he had 15,000 people standing outside who couldn't get in.
Right. I mean, there's no doubt that Senator Obama has generated great enthusiasm, and Republicans ought to be worried because there's been big turnout in the Democratic primaries. There's not been big turnout. There was not big turnout in the Republican primaries. You know, just looking at it analytically, the way the economy is going works well for the Democrats. The anger people have about the war in Iraq, that works well for the Democrats. But I will say, Tom, the fact that I think honest Democrats, even here in Washington, would concede that John McCain has a chance of being elected president goes to weaknesses in Barack Obama as a candidate. That this should be the election the Democrats win without question. But that's not the case. And I think that's because of some weaknesses Obama has.
You know, the biggest weakness, I'd love to get your take on this. My perception of Barack Obama's biggest weakness is that people don't know him. And the demonstration of that, what it appears to me, you know, is that in those states where Hillary Clinton had strong name recognition, which, of course, is everywhere in the United States. I mean, she's the ultimate A-list person. There's nobody probably in the world who doesn't know her name, or few people. Certainly nobody in the United States. There are many people in the United States who, you know, 2 years ago, myself included, had never heard of Barack Obama. I remember when my friend Nancy Skinner ran against him in the primary for the U.S. Senate seat from Illinois, and she just, you know, it was like a train hitter, you know? I mean, it was just, he's an incredible campaigner. So here's this guy who comes out of nowhere. And for the last year, we've all been subject to, I'm still getting, you know, half a dozen a day of these emails saying that he's secretly a Muslim and that he's secretly an atheist and that he's secretly an agent of Al-Qaeda and he's secretly this, he's secretly that, you know, fill in the blanks, his mother, his father, his this, his that, his preacher, you know, basically spreading hate about him and rumors about him you know, trying to destroy him as an individual.
I'll give you my perspective. This is why I think Obama could lose, and I think.
Let me just finish that thought. This thought before you respond to it, Terry, because I'd like you to speak to where I was going with it. I'm sorry,
okay.
I was way too long winded.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we see is in those states where he had enough time for people to get to know him, they picked him over Hillary Clinton in most cases. In those states where he didn't have enough time or where it was logistically impossible, California, New York, for example. They didn't pick they picked Hillary Clinton over him because they knew her and she's a good candidate and they liked her, and they just didn't know him that well. But now we see that he has a 10-point advantage over Hillary Clinton in New York and California. So I think it's just a matter of people getting to know him. So the big challenge he has right now is defining himself before John McCain defines.
Well, you know, I'm gonna sort of concede that to you, but put a different perspective on it. I think that what I see as his biggest weakness is that people aren't really sure who he is when they start to look at him, and in one particular way, and I think it shows in the exit polls. If you look at those same states, not just where Senator Clinton has won, but where she's lost, there's a certain chunk of voters that's going to Clinton instead of Obama, and those are culturally conservative Democrats. If you look at the exit polls, they ask people, do they go to church every week or more than once a week sometimes or once a month or a few times a month or never. If you go back to the February 19th primary in Wisconsin, where Obama killed Hillary, and which is a culturally conservative state, it's a state that has a history of having culturally conservative Democrats, that Obama won every category of people who said they went to church in that state except Catholics, which he lost. Hillary got 53% of the church-going Catholics in Wisconsin, but otherwise Obama won the church-going people. After that, you had the Reverend Wright story. You had his comments at the fundraiser out in San Francisco about bitter people killing guns and religion. Ohio, Pennsylvania, literally everywhere else, except literally everywhere else, he's lost people who say they go to church every week. And when you talk about Democrats in Pennsylvania and Ohio who go to church every week, that is the swing vote, I believe, in presidential elections. If McCain doesn't get it, he loses. If Obama doesn't get it, he loses. And right now he's very weak in that vote.
Yeah, and what's so ironic is that Obama seems to go to church every week, and I don't think John McCain does.
Well, that's a good point. Listen, McCain does not have a solid claim to that vote, and I don't think he has a real appeal to that vote. But I think the question people are asking themselves in that group, and by the way, in the exit polls yesterday, they asked people, did they think it was important that Obama had left the Trinity United Church of Christ?
Right.
And the people who said yes, and there was a chunk of Democrats who voted yesterday who said yes, they voted for Hillary. But I think the question that people have is, okay, obviously Barack Obama is a brilliant person. Very thoughtful person, very inquisitive person. They have a hard time hooking that person that they see, as you say that they're getting to know, up to the guy who belonged to that church for 20 years and was friends with Reverend Wright and defended Reverend Wright until recently. They can't connect those two things.
Mm. And I would say that that's because the media has made a caricature of Reverend Wright and of the church. And you know they've taken 5 minutes out of a 20-year pastorate. And held it up as if it represents everything. I mean, I'm sure, Terry, both you and I have had moments probably even public moments, that if the media took 8 days, 8 24-hour news cycles back to back, one after the other, and played a 30 or 60-second clip out of something that you or I have said could utterly destroy, or not necessarily destroy, could utterly transform the perception even of our regular listeners and your regular readers of who we are.
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say that when someone runs for president, these kind of things get magnified. But I do think that it's a legitimate judgment for people to listen to the things that Reverend Wright said and say, this is a very radical point of view this person has, and not understand why Obama would be so tolerant over such a long period of time.
Yeah, except that he wasn't there. A, he wasn't there when it was said, and B, it was taken radically out of context, but that then gets into that debate about justifying it, which is an impossible debate to have, you know. Anyhow, Terry, thanks for the conversation.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Terry Jeffrey, the editor-in-chief over at CNSNews.com. Much appreciated. 16 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People.
It's the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Toll free all across the United States, and I believe in most countries these days you can call into an 800 number in the United States if you like. And also tomhartman.com if you'd like to drop into our live chat room. And if you want to see our live video stream right now from the our world headquarters here at Air America, go to airamerica.com/TomVision, T-H-O-M, Vision. And you get to see You see the inside of our little studio here. Vanessa in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Vanessa, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Last night's speech was not a surprise to me. Hillary has been running a scorch-and-burn campaign since Super Tuesday. Therefore, her next step, independent.
It was a surprise to me, Vanessa. I guess I'm more naive than I thought I was. I don't think, though, that she'll run as an independent, but we'll see. I just can't imagine. I think she's going to stay inside. She's not going to pull a Joe Lieberman. No. I really don't think so. But we'll see. John in Seattle. Hey, John. John, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. I think that Hillary's speech last night was actually spot on. I think that everything she said, how she said it, and what she didn't say, claiming her victories, she's the support of the majority of Americans behind her. And I think that to just walk away and
wait a second. How can you say she has the majority of the support of the majority of Americans?
Because 17.5 to 18 million. I don't know. I've lost track.
But that doesn't count all the caucus states. There's a whole bunch of states where millions of voters had a few thousand people represent them at the caucuses. And those most of those went for Barack Obama, and those are not counted in that total.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, in a caucus state in Iowa, I don't know what the population of Iowa is, but let's just say for purposes of discussion, it's 4 million in Iowa. There, and I don't know how many people showed up, but again, for purposes of discussion, let's say that in all the various caucuses, 5 or 10,000 people showed up, and half of them voted for Obama and half for Hillary. Let's just even say that it was a split. That would be counted as 5,000 votes. But had there been a primary rather than a caucus, it might have been 2 million votes. And Obama won that one.
Bottom line is, these guys are extremely close. She's got a following behind her. And
I agree with you on both those points.
And I think we need to get past this mentality of Hillary versus Obama, Obama versus Hillary.
That's what I was hoping she would do last night. Let's move up past that mentality into the we're all in this together. It's the Democratic Party. John McCain is the enemy that unites us, as it were. And the friend of my the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And let's bring this party together. Why didn't she do that?
I think the fact that she's letting she went over her victories. She's keeping the notion that she's gonna still be there, she hasn't decided. She wants it. She wants the position of VP.
I'd like to have the position of CEO of Microsoft, but I'm not gonna get it. I mean,
I'm hiring somebody, I want them to aggressively go after the position. I don't want
so
them
do
to
I.
quit. I want to hear them. I want to hear their emails. I want
so
to hear
I.
their phone calls.
That's why I've been defending Hillary's staying
resume.
In this race all the way up until this point.
They have 18 million people behind them.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And that's why I have supported and defended her participation in this race. Probably one of the lone voices in progressive talk radio doing so up until this point. But he crossed the threshold where even without Michigan and Florida, he crossed the threshold where he has the majority of the requisite number of superdelegates to be the official nominee of the party. At that point, she should have had the good grace, as Mike Huckabee did, to say, okay, you win. I'm on your side now. How can I help?
Well, I have a slight problem with that because the fact of the matter is that he got 60 to 70 superdelegates to just suddenly come out of nowhere last night. He would not have.
She had 200 and some odd superdelegates who came out of nowhere at the very beginning.
He would not have gotten it based solely on the votes of South Dakota and Montana last night. He needed 87% at least in both states.
But, John, neither one of them would have gotten that. And the fact of the matter is that he did win the majority of elected delegates.
And so he arranged a backdoor deal.
No, this is not a backdoor deal. This is politics.
Out of nowhere. I, that's kind of cheesy.
No, John, this is how, this is how, how do you, you don't think Hillary Clinton has any superdelegates?
Suddenly she has 100 less superdelegates than Barack Obama.
It was a, it was a backdoor deal that got her her superdelegates?
I believe that she sent out letters.
She started the race with almost 200 more superdelegates than he did.
Read on Air America Radio the letter that she sent to the superdelegates claiming her case, that she has won more more big Democratic states than Barack Obama has.
Right. No, I know the talking points, John. I know the talking points. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at
8664 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And trying to make our computer work. Sometimes, you know, the wonders of computerism, anyhow. There's strange stuff going on in the world. Some of it downright crazy, I'll tell you. This is from the wire services, as we say. Straight man accidentally sees Sex in the City. A self-styled heterosexual man from Akron, Ohio, said today he was traumatized over the weekend after attending a showing of the new Sarah Jessica Parker film Sex and the City. Henry Colton, 34, said that he bought a ticket to the summer blockbuster Iron Man at his neighborhood multiplex but wandered into the theater showing Sex and the City instead. The minute the movie came on, I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong, he said. Mr. Colton, a sales clerk at a Home Depot in the Akron suburbs, said he tried to leave the theater immediately, but was seated in the middle of a row, making it impossible to escape without causing commotion. Everyone around me was laughing their heads out and shouting, "You go, girl," he said. It was terrifying. A spokesman for New Line Cinema, the company that released Sex in the City, said that the film grossed $55 million over the weekend, but that Mr. Colton was the only heterosexual man known to have seen it. Friends of Mr. Colton, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said that the Akron man seemed shaken by the experience of seeing the movie and was concerned that others might now doubt his long-standing claim of being heterosexual. Davis Longston, a professor of human sexuality at the University of Minnesota, said that a straight man could attend a film such as Sex and the City without experiencing any change in sexual identity. A heterosexual man could see that movie and remain heterosexual at its conclusion, Dr. Longston said. Having said that, it's totally gay that this guy did this. Thanks. A tip of the hat to Andy Borowitz, borowitzreport.com. You know, we really need to reset this conversation. I've said what I have to say about Hillary's remarks last night, my disappointment with them, what I thought she should have said. I don't want to turn the rest of the show into a Hillary bashing whatever. The fact of the matter is that the Democratic Party has a presidential nominee. It's Barack Obama. The Republican Party, a presumptive nominee. The Republican Party has a presumptive nominee. It is John McCain. And I really think that we need to get on with the conversation about what's going on with John McCain and what's going on with our country. You know, and just the train wreck that is our diplomacy, the train wreck that is, frankly, John McCain. We need to move along. But so anyhow, Jake in Eureka, California. Hey, Jake, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How's it going? Unfortunately, I think Hillary Clinton's speech last night, you know, basically an attempt to sabotage Obama's candidacy, is the first salvo in her campaign for the 2012 nomination. And
That conspiracy theory has been going around for a long, long time, Jake, and I still have a hard time believing it. Although her behavior, Did you see her and Barack Obama's speeches before AIPAC today?
No, but I caught the speech last night.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from somebody who did. I was doing show prep, and then I was on the air on KPOJ. And what I've read now so far from several emails is that Barack Obama went to some lengths to praise Hillary Clinton in his speech, and in her speech she didn't mention him in her intro remarks, and then she went on to speak perhaps disparagingly of the nominee of our party. I don't get it. I just don't get it. If that's the case, if it's not the case, then you know somebody please correct me. Let's get this out here. Mary in Seattle. Hey, Mary.
Yeah, Mary. Or Mary. Yeah, Tom.
Hi, Tom. It's Mary.
Yeah. I was the last caller yesterday. I had talked about, you know, I wanted to have a write-in thing. Mm. But my candidate lost last night. I know that she will not be the nominee. And yet, since I called in this morning, I never heard so many people that want Obama. You're all so morose. He won. Why are these people calling in one after another saying they're devastated because Hillary didn't say what you wanted her to say?
Well, because the reason why
in the Democratic Party.
Mary, there's a reason why the loser in a primary, particularly a very popular loser, and Hillary Clinton is very popular. She has broad support and deep support in this country.
That's right.
And she's a very good candidate. And the reason why the loser in a primary embraces the winner is because that is very often the thing that provides that 2 or 3 or 4% margin by which most presidents have won the presidency in the last 50 years.
Well, this time it's a little different, though, and people shouldn't be so upset.
Then this time John McCain may be our president.
And if he is, then we just have to march in the streets to win back our rights that we let our Democratic Party take away.
Yeah.
They had the chance to vote. And they always said, oh, no, the Republicans were the majority. But the Republicans
Mary, I share your frustration with the leadership of the Democratic Party.
I'm frustrated with our Democratic Party.
And I'm not picking on Nancy Pelosi because she's a woman, or Harry Reid because he's a man, for that matter. I think that Harry Reid, and Mary, thanks for the call, and I agree with Bernie Sanders. Harry Reid should have been forcing the Republicans to have every single filibuster on the floor. Stand there for the next 24 hours and talk if you want, if you're going to filibuster something. And Nancy Pelosi, on the other hand, actually, I understand her situation. She has a 30-some-odd vote majority in the House of Representatives, yet more than 40 of the elected Democrats are representing districts that typically have gone Republican and are very conservative. She's herding cats. She doesn't have a majority of progressives. She doesn't even really have a majority of solid Democrats, a reliable majority. It's much more difficult for her politically and to deal with these things, frankly, in my opinion, than it is Harry Reid. I get that. But, you know, well, enough said. Mike in Detroit. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom. Just briefly, one of the things that's really concerning to me, looking at what's just happened in the Democratic primary and moving forward to the general election, the literacy of the electorate is very, very scary. And this goes back to you and cracking the code. If you look at the Democratic primary, factual information about what actually happened in the primary, no one seems to know anymore.
Right.
Which basically tells me that when you move ahead to the general election, you can make up anything, you can say anything, and if you say it enough times, people will start to believe it. So if you go back, if you take the primary, just for one thing specifically, you start the process off with, here's a game, you can play, here's the rules, you have to fill out a form, and you sign up. Everybody did. Halfway through, like, God, I don't like these rules, I'm going to change them. So that happened, but everybody forgot what the original rules were. Everybody's forgotten what the original delegate count was. Everyone's forgotten who won what state, how you count caucuses. So now you move fast forward to the general election. We're going to face the exact same thing. And what concerns me about this the most, Hillary Clinton is one of the most intelligent, capable people that I've ever seen in my life. For her supporters to be so illiterate as to actually what happened in the election scares the heck out of me, which basically means these are the ones who support the smart candidate moving forward. It will be so easy to tell these people anything, and they just forget what actually happened. They just spin reality.
Well, I respectfully broadly would disagree. I would say that there has been a very, very effective effort at spin. I was astounded, frankly, last night watching MSNBC to see them alternating on the screen, on the chyron, on the, you know, at the bottom of the screen, between the delegate count and the popular vote. The popular vote is not a metric to determine by either party who their nominee is going to be. Nobody knows how what kind of popular vote John McCain won. The popular vote that Ron Paul has won has never been discussed. Ron Paul, by the way, is still in the race, in the Republican race, and actually taken a good chunk out of John McCain's butt in a few of these recent states. And speaking of Montana, for example, John McCain didn't, you know, they had caucuses, Republican caucuses. John McCain didn't even win them, and it wasn't mentioned last night. Now, of course, it was back 6 months ago, but nonetheless, he didn't even win them. I mean, it's almost like the corporate media in America is already carrying water for the Republican Party under the guise of sowing disunity in the Democratic Party.
Well, Tom, here's my question to you. A gentleman just called. He was passionately debating you about what happened in the Democratic Party primary, and then you mentioned to him, well, that doesn't include the caucuses.
Right.
Like, I didn't know that, and then just kept talking.
Don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is made up.
Exactly. I mean, it's so much of that, and you know, I applaud Paul Begala because I got this phrase from him, one of Hillary's biggest supporters. He said that facts are very stubborn things.
Yeah.
And no matter what you do, they just keep popping up. They just keep popping up. The emotional argument that the Hillary Clinton supporters have, I agree with it. I understand it. I see how they can feel dejected, hurt, all of those things. And I think that's fair, and I can even empathize with that if they would have that discussion and separate it out from what factually happened and say, I feel horrible about this, but there has to be some culpability for a basically political neophyte.
Yeah.
To come from nowhere.
Well, to some extent, I think that some of the Clinton supporters are probably feeling like Democrats in general felt in 2000 and 2004 when they felt that the election was stolen from them. There's sort of PTSD flashback here. There's recollection of all those negative feelings. And, you know, I get that. And that's why it's so important for the person who's at the head of the ticket to participate in and begin that healing process. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. It is just so important that Hillary Clinton begin moving us beyond this divisiveness. And last night was the big speech that she would have in front of the world to do that. Well, here I am back talking about that. 45 minutes past that.
Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270, our number. David in Fort Worth, Florida. Hey, David.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let me preface my comments by saying that neither Hillary nor Obama were my candidate, so I'm not biased either way.
Yeah, I started out as a Kucinich and an Edwards guy. I mean,
you and me both. Kucinich, I'm from Cleveland, and I know a lot more about him than the media would allow. Discussion concerning, but so Dennis was my original pick. I think that what's occurring inside both the Clinton campaign and the entire primary process now is a calculated effort to keep those who are rabidly long-term, have their dreams vested in Hillary, involved in this process. And a concession speech and a hug and a kiss last night would not have done that. And I think that this is something that they have to work through over a period of time.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight. You're suggesting that by not acknowledging Obama's victory last night, Hillary Clinton was doing that to benefit him?
I think in the long term, people, if she would have been making the typical concession speech last night, there would have been a percentage and a damaging percentage in the fall elections that would have walked away and say, I'm not sticking with this candidate, my candidate lost, and I'm just not going to turn out.
But see, I'm hearing that right now. That's what I'm getting an email from people is, from some of the stronger Hillary supporters is, either A, we're going to take it to the convention, or B, I'm out of here.
Well, and I think that this is a very calculated balancing act that they're performing. And I think this is one of the reasons why Obama specifically has been very careful in his comments, because he needs those Ohio voters and those Pennsylvania voters, and we need those Ohio voters and those Pennsylvania voters.
Sure.
And whatever they have to do to maintain that solid block, because they're making sure that Hillary's comfortable, and that's where they're going to take their direction from. Mm-hmm. And conceding last night, I don't think would have been perceived to be Hillary speaking honestly. And if they see her feeling slighted, just like that, they're gone.
Yeah.
I think this is a very calculated, and Hillary's not stupid, and Bill's not stupid, and Obama's not stupid. And I think they have to be very careful, what they send out in terms of an impression, before this fall election actually takes place on does she feel slighted in the process, right or wrong, good or bad, fair or not? Yeah. They're gonna run.
Very, very interesting.
It's a tough balancing act, but I don't think I have a choice right now.
Yeah, I got it, David. Thank you very much. I hadn't considered it from that perspective, and I'm still not sure. Let me chew on that one for a little while. It might take a few minutes. It might take a day or so. And it's going to be interesting to. And by the way, folks in the chat room tell me that actually Hillary said nice things about Obama during her speech at AIPAC. I stand corrected, and I salute her for that. Eddie in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Eddie.
Oh, hi, Tom. How are you?
Just great. What's up?
I believe that you put it out very clearly earlier today during the show. I mean, this coming election is not about McCain or Obama or Hillary. This whole thing is about we the people, about liberty and justice and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. We are losing it every day on a very fast pace. And if we don't get our act together, forget our differences and stop thinking selfishness and stop being greedy, we are going to fall at the bottom of the pit, and no one can save us. This is about us, and we have to think about this nation and our children and what's going to happen to us when we grow old. That's what I believe.
And what kind of world we're going to leave to our children, and whether, I mean, here we are in a world, thank you, Eddie, very much, we're in a world where 90% of the big fish in the oceans have vanished, where the majority of large mammals that are not food animals for humans, setting aside cows and pigs, the majority of large mammals in the world are at risk for extinction. And by the way, we're one of the large mammals. We're the top predator. This puts us at risk. Where there is not a single biological system on this planet that is not in decline. And radical things need to be done, not just to save the United States. We're talking about the Earth. I encourage you to get a copy of Leonardo DiCaprio's. It's out in DVD. His movie, The 11th Hour. It's a good one. Chris in Carson City, Nevada. Nevada.
Hey Tom.
Hey Chris. What's up?
I think I'm. You sort of took the wind out of my sails here a bit, but I agree with your last caller. I think that this situation is far more complex and subtle than emotional fair play would indicate. I think that the Clintons have been around and have been reputedly considered the most astute politicians to hit the scene ever. I mean, in a long time. And I think to dissemble her motivations as if we all can read her mind is... I think it's a bit presumptuous.
Well, I haven't asserted her motivation at all, and probably unlike a lot of folks who view her as a narcissist or as evil or whatever. I mean, I get all this email about how terrible she is. I don't go there. I don't believe it, frankly.
Well,
I don't know what her motivation is. That's why that's why I said I'm disappointed and I'm baffled.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that when you get into the internecine things that have gone on. I mean, consider, Barack Obama came from out of nowhere. Now, he might be riding the charisma surfboard of the, you know, of the millennium, but, you know, charisma doesn't just bring you into the internet or the national stage like that. He's connected up. I mean, he somehow has made deals with whatever it takes to get to that level. He didn't just do it.
No, he's clearly, you know, he's part of the system now.
Yeah. So the point is, I think to denigrate Hillary, you know, in the sense of giving Barack, you know, some rocket ship blast off to the nomination, I don't think that's realistic. I think this is politics, and it's hardball politics.
And let's
get
some time
to see what they really think, the Clintons.
Yeah. Okay, Chris. Thanks a lot for your input.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Truth in Broadcasting.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what you know, and sometimes you don't even know what you need to know, or sometimes, as the Fireside Theater says,
you know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is it possible that there is a secret history to the American Empire? John Perkins is with us again. He's the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. He has a new book out, The Secret History of the American Empire, Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. John, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. It's great to be with you again.
Great to have you back on the show. The Secret History of American Empire. I thought a lot of this stuff was pretty out in the open. What am I missing?
Well, I think, you know, unfortunately, most of us here in the United States don't realize that we truly are reaping the fruits of a vast empire that survives on tremendous exploitation of resources and people around the world. It's been built, unlike other empires, not through the military, but through economic hitmen, and therefore it's been done pretty secretly. And I think that's very dangerous because when other empires were built, everyone knew they were sending their young men off to war to conquer other lands. It was done out in the open. Because this one's done using people like what I used to do, economic hitmen, the American public doesn't understand that. And for a democracy, it's essential that the voting public be educated, understand what their foreign policy is all about. If we don't understand that, if this truly is being done in secret, then it's very hard for us to be educated voters, which to me is a real threat to us as a democracy. It's why I write these books, Tom.
You know, in 1773, the British passed the Tea Act, which actually lowered the taxes on tea for the British East India Company, which gave them a huge competitive edge against the small entrepreneurial tea importers and tea sellers up and down the east coast of the United States. And threatened to put thousands of small businesses. I mean, basically, it was the Walmartization of America effort on the part of the British East India Company. You know, this was organized in back rooms by people like you're describing. This is not something new.
Well, it's not new, and yet the British also had a very strong military presence here and enforced it. And ultimately, I think it was the Boston Massacre. It was things like that. It sent us over the edge.
Yeah, but the Boston Tea Party really started. And you read Jefferson's writings before that. He had just written, you know, a summary view of the rights of British Americans, a little booklet on how to be a good citizen of England. You know, 6 months later, the Tea Party happens, and a month after that, he's talking about revolution.
Yeah, and you know, despite the tea taxes and all those commercial things that are very much like what economic hitmen do today, there's no question. There was also that very physical presence of the military here. Americans knew that we were a dominated people under the British Empire,
right,
which was essentially an imperialistic military empire. today things are a bit different. I think in a lot of the rest of the world, people do understand that our presence is a very imperialistic one. But we in the United States don't realize. I think most British citizens at that time knew that their armies were going around the world, not just to the United States, but to many other places. But today, we're aware of Iraq, we're aware of Afghanistan, but we're not aware of the very subtle things that we do and very dangerous things throughout Africa, Latin America, the Middle East, and Asia.
Yeah. We're talking with John Perkins, his new book, The Secret History of the American Empire, Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. John, let's define some terms here. Economic hitman.
Well, I think it's fair to say we're the ones who created this empire, and we've done it many different ways, but without the military. Perhaps the most common is that we'll identify a third world country with resources our corporations covet, like oil, arrange a huge loan to that country, but the money doesn't go to the country. It goes to our own corporations to build power plants and roads and industrial parks in that country, things that help a few rich people but don't help the majority of the people who are too poor to buy electricity or drive cars or don't have skills to get jobs in industrial parks.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're all left holding this huge debt that they can't repay. So at some point we go back and say, listen, give us a pound of flesh. Sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies. Vote with us on the next UN vote. Send troops in support of ours to Iraq or someplace like that.
Right.
And when we fail, which isn't too often, I talk about how I failed in Panama and Ecuador, then the jackals go in and either overthrow governments or assassinate the leaders, as what happened when I failed with Jaime Roldos in Ecuador. He was assassinated, the same with Omar Torrijos in Panama.
Mm-hmm. So, John Negroponte, is he a jackal?
He's closer to the economic hitman side of it. I don't think he actually goes in and assassinates people.
No, but I mean, he went down to El Salvador, and within a matter of months, all of a sudden there were these death squads, and people were showing up with their hands tied behind their back and a bullet in their head. He went over to Iraq, and I predicted on the air that within a week we'd start seeing the same kind of political assassinations we saw in El Salvador with people with their hands tied behind their back and a bullet in their head. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, it started.
Exactly. You know, that's the corporatocracy, what I call the corporatocracy at work, and people like Negroponte move around the highest circles of government and corporations, and all of this is being done in the name of corporations, which I also think, Tom, gives us great hope that we can change this without blood, without militarization, because it's an empire that's built by corporations, and they are totally dependent on us to buy their goods and services.
And beyond that, they're dependent upon our governments to sanction their existence. And you know, at least in theoretically in a democracy, we get to make those rules.
True. And, you know, I've been kind of on this road trip since Confessions came out in November of 2004. I'm right now in San Francisco, going up to Eugene and Portland in the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I've found in these last 3.5 years, I think the American people really are waking up. I think we're beginning to understand this and beginning to understand that if we just don't buy shirts made in sweatshops, there'll be no more sweatshops, or the sweatshops will become legitimate factories where the workers there get real wages and health care and retirement. If we refuse to buy anything that isn't made with integrity.
John, it's not going to happen.
I believe it is, Tom.
You can't say to somebody who's making $15,000-$20,000 a year working as a clerk at 7-Eleven and part-time and working part-time as a janitor at the school down the street and trying to put, you know, three kids through school and whatever. You can't say to them, sorry, you can't shop at Walmart. You've got to shop at the upscale, all union made, nice, warm and fuzzy, costs three times as much store down the street. You can't do it.
Well, you know, Nike.
What you have to do is use the power of government. You have to wake people up to the horrors that are happening and say, okay, if you want to make something with a sweatshop, we're going to impose 130% tariff on it.
Well,
and all of a sudden, the shop stuff starts being much more expensive in our stores than the stuff made here in the United States, which is how, by the way, it was until the 1980s.
I agree with you ideally, Tom, but the problem is that most government regulatory agencies are under the control of the big corporations. And they're lobbyists, as is,
at the moment,
as are most of our government officials. I think we have to take both approaches, but we have to remember, I mean, you mentioned Walmart, but a lot of people are paying a heck of a lot of money for sweatshop made goods at Nike, and those are not cheap. There are a lot of things we cannot all do the right thing, but enough of us can that it'll turn the corporations around. We're already seeing this. We're seeing that Walmart, in fact, 3.5 years ago was not even talking green today they are implementing more green.
Walmart's going green because it makes them money. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
It saves, actually, it saves them money. But it's got nothing to do with, I mean, you know, greenwashing their image is nice, but I don't think that they, you know, that's probably a 5% variable in their decision-making process. The 95% was, hey, we can cut our energy costs by 2% by going green, and that 2% over, you know, 1,000 stores represents hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
When did I last see you, Tom? Was it the Chicago Green Festival?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago.
About a couple of weeks ago. You were coming off the stage. I was going on the stage. And out there on that floor, you know, the marketplace, hundreds, perhaps thousands of entrepreneurs that are trying to make things greener and more socially responsible.
I
think we're, you know, you wouldn't have seen that. It just started 5 years ago, but basically the Green Festivals, and it's taking off. I really think there's a movement across this.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, John. And I agree that we should buy with our best intentions. But to mistake our dollars for votes and to say that making economic choices is voting with your dollars, that's not democratic. If anything, it's the opposite. We need to use our democratic processes to change the rules of the game.
Well, I totally agree with you, but I think it's going to take both. We have to do it through the political process, and we do it through the commercial process, too.
Yeah.
You know, you'd mentioned the Boston Tea Party earlier. That was the tea taxes, and that was a huge incentive for people like John Hancock to stick their necks in a noose, which basically they were doing.
Yeah, that was where economics drove politics, but it was economic self-interest. I think most Americans don't get it yet, and that's why it's so important that they read things like John Perkins' new book, The Secret History of the American Empire, Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. John, thanks for dropping by, and good luck on your book tour as you work your way up into Portland.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Truth in Broadcasting.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The hour. Looking over at realclearpolitics.com, where you can this is not a partisan site. This is just a, hey, we break out the numbers site. Realclearpolitics.com. The result of the size of Obama's win in Montana last night pushed him over the top with the popular vote. His popular vote total, 17,535,458. This doesn't count caucus states, right? Hillary Clinton, 17,493,836. In other words, he had about 40,000 more votes in the popular vote. Now, that's assuming that you don't count Michigan, which was not supposed to be counted. If you do count Michigan, then Hillary Clinton is ahead by 48,000 votes. But without counting Michigan, Obama, and that's giving Obama zero votes in Michigan. She's ahead by 48,000. If you don't count Michigan, then he wins by 41,622. Fascinating. And one of our listeners emailed and said, maybe this is the second law of thermodynamics. Maybe this is just, you know, time to let the air out. I hope so. I hope so. Barbara in Spicer, New Mexico. Hey, Barbara. Is it New Mexico or Minnesota? I'm sorry, it's Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm doing dyslexia here on the screen.
Okay. Good afternoon. I listened yesterday and heard the one woman in particular talk about not voting at all or voting, doing a write-in for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And it upset me because, among other things, when she ignores the Supreme Court and the all the necessity of that, we would be handicapped for the next 100 years, I think. I look at the Ledbetter case in particular, because with the Ledbetter case, we're talking about the overturning of precedent, which Alito and Roberts said they wouldn't do when they were being confirmed. And therefore, we can continue pay discrimination against gender, against race, against disability, against age. All of those things are involved.
Yeah, stare decisis is out the window.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, when Congress tried to straighten it out so that they could go back to the precedent, McCain was not there to vote, but he indicated that he would have opposed it anyway,
right,
because just think of all of the trial cases that could be brought up that way.
Right. How dare we consider litigating against people who've injured us?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, especially if they're corporations. I mean, we can't interfere with profit. I think, Barbara, that you have identified probably one of the biggest issues that we should all be thinking about and be concerned about with regard to the election this fall, and that is the status of corporations in America. John Roberts was a $2 million a year, you know, high-priced, Gucci-wearing corporate lawyer, you know, type. And, you know, one of the real leaders in the movement for corporate personhood in the United States, for the idea that corporations should have as many rights and perhaps, well, not perhaps, and more rights, given the fact that they can live forever, they can accumulate wealth forever, they never have to go through probate, they can own others of their own kind, which we call slavery when we apply it to human species. The corporations should have more rights than persons. And it is frightening, frankly. I mean, there's all these different, I mean, you know, set aside Roe v. Wade if you want. I mean, there's 100 other precedents and cases and situations where the Supreme Court has the ability and, in fact, very much has shaped the nature of America. I mean, you just go back to some of the cases. First National Bank of Boston versus '87. It's the case that said that a corporation can give money to PACs and things. I mean, there's this whole series of Supreme Court cases that have dramatically enhanced corporate power.
Right, and Alito and Roberts are young.
Yeah. Yeah, the good news, I guess, is that Scalia is in his 70s, although he seems to be the Energizer Bunny of the Supreme Court. Barbara, thank you for the call, and thanks for bringing it up. I appreciate it. Marie in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Marie.
Hi. It's an honor to speak with you. I just wanted to know I'm a 64-year-old white woman, political junkie since high school when our civics class required us to work for a candidate.
Oh, that's great.
I want to say this to everyone out there. I actually got so emotional last night because just think about this. The Democrats came up with two historical candidates.
Marie, can you hold on for just a second? I'm sorry. I missed the time break on that, and I didn't realize the break was coming. And, you know, once it starts, we can't stop it. Hang on just a second. I'll put you back on when we come back from the break.
Thanks.
It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program right here on Air America Radio. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
As I walked out tonight in the mystic garden, the wounded flowers were dangling from the vine. I was passing by a young, cool crystal fountain. Someone hit me from behind. Ain't talking, just walking through this weary.
hot, but I'm still yearning.
Well, we're walking and talking here on the Tom Hartman program, 34 minutes past the hour. In just a moment, Professor Carl Grossman is going to be with us. First, though, Marie, I had missed the time break there before the last break, and you were making a point. I wanted to give you an opportunity to finish it.
Oh, thank you. Yes, my point is a plea to all the Hillary supporters out there who are hurting and feeling bad right now to look in the mirror and think about my grandchildren and the children of the world, and we cannot afford to have John McCain elected president. We have to get over this and get I mean, this is just too hugely important. I mean, I've waited my whole life to either see a black person or a white woman, either way, but my God, I love my grandchildren so much. I cannot face the fact that we would have another George Bush in office. It's just too much for me to bear. I just can't. Yeah. And I just have to say that to everyone out there. Please, just think about that.
Marie very elegantly said, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for the heartfelt call. I do appreciate it. Professor Carl Grossman is with us. He's a professor of journalism at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury, the author of several books on nuclear technology, the host of the nationally syndicated TV program Enviro Close-Up. And Professor Grossman, welcome to the program.
Our pleasure, Tom.
You recently wrote an op-ed that was published over at commondreams.org suggesting that this climate change legislation that John McCain is quite enthusiastic about, and I'm curious to get your information about where the other candidate, where Barack Obama stands on this as well, but that this Lieberman-Warner bill has buried in it a subsidy for nuclear power, and it's not just any little subsidy like the $20 billion bucks we're giving them right now out in the open. Sir?
It's quite a subsidy. Nuclear isn't mentioned in this climate change bill, but in fact, an aide of Joseph Lieberman, Senator Lieberman, has described this bill as the biggest incentive for nuclear power in the history of nuclear power. This was in an energy trade journal a while back. And where this little item is buried is in section 4401 of the bill, which says that not more than 45% of the funds shall be used, and it goes on and on, for power plants that emit no carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. What they've done is tailor-make this provision to, as they see it, nuclear power plants. And the bottom line, according to the accounting of Friends of the Earth, they've gone through the numbers, is that this bill would generate $544 billion, that's with a B, dollars for this new nuclear power drive that the nuclear establishment is on.
That's mind-boggling. You know, on top of Price Anderson protecting them from theoretically trillions of dollars of liability, saving them certainly billions of dollars in insurance costs, Price Anderson Act, the legislation that has allowed the nuclear industry to exist in the United States, which says that if there's a nuclear meltdown, the companies themselves are not responsible. They can't be sued. Instead, you and I are responsible, and we have to pay for the cleanup.
Yeah, in fact, if you go to your local insurance agent and say, well, I know about Price Anderson, give me a rider for my policy, they won't give, I mean, if it's so safe, why can't you get insurance for it?
Right. You can't.
Unbelievable. And just let me mention, if I could, on this climate, I mean, what they've been looking for, the nuclear establishment, because it's more than just the nuclear industry. It's the nuclear grouping in government, the Department of Energy, all the national nuclear laboratories. They've been there lurking, waiting for an opening, and they think that they have it with climate change, a huge problem. And the claim is that nuclear power plants don't emit greenhouse gases. What they neglect to mention is that the overall nuclear fuel cycle, mining, milling, fuel enrichment and fabrication, reprocessing, has significant greenhouse gas emissions that do contribute to global warming. So it's a hoax. In fact, I did a piece a couple of months back in Extra, the magazine of FAIR, the hoax of nuclear power being a green energy.
Right. Nuclear power plants also use enormous amounts of water and convert a fair amount of that into water vapor, which is also a potent greenhouse gas.
And then the bottom line, of course, is that these things have killed. I've been to Russia several times. I am quite familiar with the consequences of the Chernobyl accident. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who have died as a result of Chernobyl. I did a documentary on Three Mile Island, and Three Mile Island, despite the nuclear propaganda, also killed. And we're talking about a technology here that, whether it's in a catastrophic accident, which is not covered in the United States in terms of people aren't covered for the damage, or the routine emissions, these nuclear plants constantly produce poisons that are allowed to be emitted to what's called nuclear waste, which are the poisons, these hotly radioactive substances that have developed in the course of fission that have to be safeguarded for millions of years. I mean, this is a life-shortening, a life-threatening technology like we've never seen before in terms of scale.
We're talking with Professor Carl Grossman. Professor, how is it that France is able to produce about 80% of their total electricity with nuclear power? And they claim, at least according to the feel-good puff piece that I saw on one of the networks a month or two ago, they claim that they're reprocessing their waste down to the point of insignificance, and that somehow nuclear waste just is not an issue for them. What am I missing here? I didn't realize that there had been any breakthroughs in nuclear technology.
There's none. I mean, it's baloney. In terms of the waste, what the French have been doing is classification. And that's nice. I mean, for about 700 or 800 years, you can encase some of this hotly radioactive waste in glass. Yeah, but what about for the rest of the millions of years, what's going to happen? As to the French nuclear program, and I've written about this, and also if listeners want to get more details, go to the website of Beyond Nuclear. That's beyondnuclear.org, and you can get all kind of details about the hoax of the French, the myth that the French nuclear power program has been run safely and well. Again, beyondnuclear.org. You'll learn about, for example, near La Hague, where their reprocessing facility is, how marine life is just saturated at this point with radiation, and there are major cancer clusters all along that coast. I mean, there has been a huge health impact in France because of its very government-organized nuclear power program.
Now, they're taking their waste and they're mixing it with glassification, and putting it where? I mean, we've had this big debate about, Yucca Flats or whatever it is in Nevada.
Yucca Mountain.
I'm sorry?
Yucca Mountain, yeah.
Yucca Mountain, yeah, thank you. But it still hasn't happened. First of all, you say glassification is only good for 800 years. The half-life of plutonium is, what, a quarter of a million? They have to be producing mind-boggling amounts of waste. Where are they putting it?
Well, just quick on plutonium, the half-life of plutonium-239 is 24,500 years.
Thank
Multiply
you.
That by 20, and you have the hazardous lifetime, which is 500,000 years. They're just putting it in the ground and crossing their fingers. We're talking about Yucca Mountain. Yucca Mountain, I mean, there's 69 distinct earthquake fault lines in Yucca Mountain. I mean, there's issues of water getting into this safe nuclear repository and so forth.
Right.
But, I mean... Where
so the French are just like, do they have one giant nuclear depository, or are they creating thousands of small ones all over the country?
No, several. They've committed themselves to, well, the government committed France to nuclear power, but there's been, go to beyondnuclear.org and you can see the true history of the French nuclear power program.
Right.
Let me mention one other thing, why Lieberman and Warner with McCain are trying to use this opening of global warming and this climate change bill, this carbon credit bill, to get nuclear through. The reason is that Wall Street won't touch nuclear power. In fact, last year, a grouping of, I'm talking about major financial institutions, Citigroup and others, wrote to the Department of Energy saying that the risks are too enormous for Wall Street to take, and without governmental subsidy, governmental support. In other words, they don't only want our lives, they want our money.
Right.
Without public money, this so-called revival, better a relapse would be the word, of nuclear power can't happen. So what Lieberman and Warner have arranged with the vigorous support of McCain, I mean, someone has gotten to McCain and sold
them. Well, probably one of the lobbyists on his staff. Where does Obama stand on this thing?
Obama, I don't know his position on the climate change bill, but I think we have to be very concerned about Obama. I mean, I think what happened last night is so important and so great, but David Axelrod, who is a chief advisor, is a former consultant to Exelon, which is a big nuclear utility.
Yeah.
So we got to have to be concerned. Obama hopefully is open. McCain certainly is.
So we have to hold all of their feet to the fire, no pun intended. Professor Carl Grossman, thanks so much for dropping by, sir. And once again, that website you were mentioning?
It's beyondnuclear.org, and people can check out my website, which is callwithakgrossman.com.
Thank you, sir.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Before the hour, welcome back. Oh man, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and 152 days and counting. John McCain out there spinning the facts and trying to reinvent himself as Mr. Not owned by corporate America, as Mr. Not who he actually is. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling. Anyhow, Mark in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great. What's up?
I listened to the AIPAC speech,
both of them?
Both by Obama and Clinton.
Uh-huh.
And first of all, Obama's was incredible. He actually, toward the end, started talking about, you know, he wouldn't be there if not for the civil rights workers of the 60s and the Jewish, kids that were in the car and got killed and all that kind of stuff. And it was very, very, you know, very inspirational. He got a nice, standing ovation.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Hillary is concerned, I personally didn't think it was anything disrespectful as far as Barack was concerned. I was hoping she would take that time to, concede the election, but unfortunately she didn't. I don't think it was any different than what we heard last night.
Yeah, I think the slam on her that I related early on in the show, and I have since retracted and perhaps should even apologize for just grabbing something out of a chat room and tossing it out in the air like that, something I very, very, very rarely do, is the trolls are starting to come out. You know, it is, I talked about this yesterday, how we had to, back in 2004, we actually had to put a, you know, if you want to get into our message boards and leave a message, you have to register with a credit card just so that we could. Once we bounced somebody, once we found people who were paid trolls who were working for the RNC and who were being paid anywhere from 10 to 50 cents a post to post on blogs, you know, depending on how important or famous or whatever the blogs were, that we had to have a way to say, you know, okay, this person definitely is locked out, you know, for good. And because they were just there to be paid disruptors. And I think it's starting to happen all over the place. I don't know. Maya, thanks for the call, though, and thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Maya in Woodstock, New York. Hey, Maya.
Hi, Tom. I'm not a troll.
Bless you. Thank you.
I'm an Obama supporter, and I'm not upset about what Hillary did last night, and I'm not bitter about what she did either. We had a great party here with all the Obama supporters. But I do have one little insight that I have not heard anyone discussing, and I think that this is about money, and I don't mean that in a slanderous way. I believe that Hillary, like you, was right to stay in the race, until the very last primary. But and I also thought that she would elegantly unite the party last night with her speech. But and I thought that she was actually starting to go there because she named every type of person who supported her. And I thought, okay, she's drawing them in. She's drawing them in. But what she ended up doing is directing them to her website. And I think this is about the fact that she needs to raise a lot of money.
And to repay her campaign debts, you're talking
that's
about.
Right. And yeah. When you go to either candidate's website, the first thing that comes up is the donation page. So anybody that Hillary, you know, invited to give their opinions to her last night are first going to see a donation page.
Yeah.
And I really think that that is part of her calculation. I mean, I agree with you. We, you know, until we can walk a mile in someone else's moccasins, we don't know why they do what they do. But talking about calculations, I think this is part of a calculation for it's her last big opportunity to really get a lot of hits on her website and raise some money. And
well,
if that's
the case, Maya, then that saddens me as well. And you know, her last opportunity on a major national stage with huge wall-to-wall press coverage to unite the country, and she used it to try to pay down some of her campaign debt. I hope it's not that crass. I really do. And we'll probably never know. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm really liking the theory that several of our callers and some folks in the chat room have proposed that you know, she's going through the stages of grief that we talked about yesterday. As are many of her supporters, and that she hasn't completed the process, and that we're just going to have to go along with her on this ride for a couple of days. And, you know, we'll see where it is. But, you know, Ed Rendell came out today and said, hey, I don't care if you've got 18 million voters or not. You don't negotiate with somebody who just won. You know, Barack Obama won. You don't engage in negotiations. He's the winner. He makes the choices now. That would be like Al Gore after the Supreme Court decision saying to Bush, okay, let's negotiate fill in the blank. You have an election, you have a winner and a loser. It's a very stark process, but, you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Just one quick thing. Obama came out on the AP today, and when he was asked about what she did last night or what she didn't do last night, he's quoted as saying she was understandably focused on her supporters.
So understandably what?
She was understandably focused on her supporters.
I still missed that word.
Oh, the reporter had asked him what he thought of her speech last night, the fact that she didn't concede.
She was understandably, what was the word on her supporters?
Focused.
Focused. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I was hearing a Yiddish word. okay. And that's, you know, definitely giving her the benefit of the doubt. I will do more of that as time goes on here, too. Maya, thank you very much. Great to hear from you. And tomorrow we'll be doing our show live from the United Nations. Be sure and check it out. We'll look forward to talking with you then. And don't forget, my friends, no matter what, don't ever forget. It's not enough just to vote. Democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag your it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.